Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, our typical schedule when you and I get together is this. We get on the air, we talk about last week's Big Ten games, we then may talk about your power rankings, we then look at what's coming up the following week in the Big Ten, but no, not this week, my friend, and the reason why, you and I chatted for just a couple minutes prior to getting on the air, and I told you, just to let our listeners know what was going on, as I'm waiting for you to get on, I'm reading an article about Colin Cowherd just hating on Penn State, saying that Ole Miss plays Penn State in the playoffs. Ole Miss would clean them up. Florida would get all the money bet on them. Florida would beat Penn State. And this whole Southeast Conference bias was just getting to me. I want to know, does it have the same effect on you?
Yes, it's driving me crazy because, and this is why I think it's driving me crazy, Jim. I don't know that there's any other basis for the argument that a bunch of three-loss SEC teams should be ahead of teams like Penn State and Indiana in the Big Ten. And if you want to throw in SMU, Miami out of the ACC, I don't know that this is based on anything other than the preseason rankings. Like,
yes,
those teams had a favorable advantage because every year the SEC gets 37 of their 16 teams ranked in the preseason poll. And so it just kind of sets it up as if the SEC is this almighty conference. But it's just getting to the point where it's very frustrating. Like, who would be favored on a neutral field? Who would be favored if this game was played, you know, at Ole Miss? I don't care. Alabama, I think, was like a 3-touchdown favorite against Vanderbilt and got beat. They didn't just like lose that game. They got beat.
Vanderbilt outplayed them.
Yeah. And so you can't make excuses of like, well, they didn't have this schedule, that schedule. And I've been a proponent of this. It's not just the amount. It's just not just the talent of the teams you play. But a lot of people think the Big Ten does a disservice by playing 9 conference games. And when you schedule that 9th, and in this case, let's use Penn State as an example. They played West Virginia week 1. They played 10 Power 5 opponents. You're going up against bigger bodies. You're going up against more talented players. That takes a toll, and that tests your depth every week versus the SEC. Sometimes they'll schedule that 9th Power 5 game, but then they also schedule Mercer or Chattanooga, or whoever else they're playing in the month of November to kind of break that up. So that's got to be a factor. The Power 4 opponent, still has to be a factor in this. Like, I don't know. We just keep making excuses for the SEC to lose more and more games. And I saw one tweet that was very fitting. Somebody made an argument for South Carolina and Ole Miss at 3 losses to get in, and somebody just responded with, why don't you wiggle Vanderbilt into that conversation while you're at it? And I thought that was pretty appropriate.
Well, the thing is, I do believe traditionally the Southeast Conference has been the best conference. I also believe Alabama and Georgia have been the elite teams in college football. Maybe you could throw Ohio State in there. A couple years ago, you could include Clemson in that. But that was it. Okay, those teams were better than everybody else. But let me tell you what those elite teams don't do, Dustin. Okay, here's what they don't do. They don't lose to Vanderbilt, okay? Right. They don't lose to Arkansas. They don't lose to Kentucky. And that's what happened. Now, I know there are people who are critical of Penn State. Penn State has played 3 games on the road that have been very close. They had to go to overtime to beat USC on the road. They had to come back against Wisconsin. they had to come back and just barely beat Minnesota. All three of those games were on the road, but all three of those games have one thing in common, Dustin. You know what they are?
They all have winning records?
No, Penn State won. They won, okay? They didn't lose to a Kentucky, a Vanderbilt, an Arkansas. They didn't. They didn't lose to Northern Illinois either, okay? Right. They didn't play particularly well against Bowling Green. You know what? That was not a great look. It was not. But you know what they did that Notre Dame didn't do against Northern Illinois? They won.
They won.
Yes. There's something about actually getting on the field and winning the game, Dustin. And this year, the Southeast Conference teams, now I'm going to take Georgia out of the argument a little bit because their losses were to good teams. They also have several good wins, but everybody else lost. Tennessee lost to Arkansas. We all know Alabama lost to Vanderbilt. Let's see, Ole Miss lost to Kentucky. They also lost to a four-loss LSU team. By the way, that's the same LSU team that lost to USC. Middle of the road Big Ten team.
And they got beat by Florida this week. Hey, that's a Florida team that just clinched bowl eligibility. And let me throw this out there too, Jim, because this bothers me maybe more than anything. Okay, I will listen to some of the two-loss arguments. If you're going to knock Penn State at 10-1, if you're going to knock Indiana at 10-1 because they don't have that big signature win, can you show me where Texas's is?
Oh, wait. I got the answer to this question. Let me answer. They beat Michigan.
Yep. This is the same Michigan team that Indiana beat and got knocked for. Now, I know it was a little bit different. Texas went on the road, had to win in Ann Arbor, and they won handedly versus an Indiana team that kind of struggled with Michigan. But at the end of the day, they were both 1-0 after that game. Like, they both won that game. And then the only game – so if you want to make the comparison, right, Ohio State, Penn State, Georgia, Texas, Penn State played Ohio State better on their home field than Texas played Georgia on their home field. So why is Texas not getting the same criticism that Indiana and Penn State are receiving? And I can tell you why, Jim. They've got a three-letter patch on their jersey. And it's not B1G.
Exactly. And that's, and you know what? I'm actually, and I got to give full disclosure. We recorded this prior to the Tuesday night college football playoff committee rankings. Okay. But what's aggravating us is it's, you know, Paul Feinbaum, every guy on ESPN, Colin Cowherd, the playoff committee, I think, has done a pretty good job. They're being criticized, and they've been criticized quite a bit for Penn State, for Indiana. However, they actually have, I think, done a pretty good job. You lose two games. You lose games against, you know, like I said, Kentucky and Arkansas and Vanderbilt. That counts against you. It's a mark against your record. And, you know, there's this ongoing argument, best team versus most deserving. Well, the best teams are the ones who actually win on the field. And you know what else the best teams don't do, Dustin? They don't lose to Vanderbilt.
And they don't lose to LSU or Florida or Kentucky.
Exactly.
These are the things they don't do.
Exactly. And I know maybe this makes us Big Ten homers, but, you know, I do want to try to be fair about this. And I think a lot of years, Georgia and Alabama have been the two best teams in the country. I get that. And I believe it's been the case. I just don't see, there's just not a dominant team this year. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure yet how good Oregon is, okay? Remember, they struggled early in the season against Boise State. They struggled against Idaho. And they have that great win against Ohio State. But, you know, when you have these teams now, Ole Miss Ole Miss and Alabama and those LSU, those teams, if they were great teams, they wouldn't have that third loss or fourth loss even, Dustin. So to me, their argument, when they had two losses versus one, maybe. And like I said, Georgia specifically, I'll listen to the argument for Georgia. I will. But these other teams with those awful losses and three losses, if it were just one time they stubbed their toe and they're 11-1 with that loss, okay. But no, it's three losses.
Yeah. And here's the thing that I think is more bothersome than anything else. I think for years, the knock against the Big Ten was the fact that even though for a lot of years, I think the Big Ten was actually deeper talent-wise, one through, you know, previously 14 than the SEC was. But the knock was, well, you don't have those top three or four teams that are truly elite, that are really, really good. Because it was always Ohio State, Penn State, or Ohio State, Michigan, or Michigan State, Wisconsin. Like, there was always just one or two teams that were really elite. And oh, how the tables have turned, Jim. Because guess what? The Big Ten, I don't think outside of the top five, I would throw Illinois into this category. I do think the SEC is deeper. I think they're more talented top to bottom. I just think that's a fact. But guess what they don't have? The top four teams that are elite this season. And I know maybe it's only three teams because we don't know about Indiana. They got smoked against Ohio State, but that's Ohio State in Columbus. The fact of the matter is the Big Ten, like, they completely shifted the argument now that the Big Ten had made for so long. And now all of a sudden it's like, well, anybody could be 11-1 in the Big Ten. We've got all this depth. It's like, you guys are idiots. This is what we were trying to tell you for so long. You can't knock us for what we were trying to say and then try to turn around and make it into your benefit. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. And it's just so frustrating.
It really is, Dustin. And it got me going crazy. And I will point out too, I'm in agreement that the SEC is deeper, but I think some of these Big Ten teams like USC, like Wisconsin, like Minnesota are a bit underrated. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we come back, because I want to get your take on a couple of those teams. We'll do it when we get back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Salty Jim. He's Salty Dustin. We're all worked up today, Dustin.
Yes, we are. We're talking about the playoffs, so how can you not?
That's exactly it. And this whole Southeast Conference bias, and I think you and I are kind of on the same page. I do believe there is depth to the Southeast Conference, but I also think something interesting that's going on is, and this year, it feels like to me, this home and road disparity is so great. For example, Alabama has three losses in conference. All three are on the road. Okay? Now, in the Big Ten, which we talked about this early in the year, you know, that traveling two time zone thing. Here's what's fascinating to me. USC, who I think is better than their record, they're 4-1 at home. 1-4 on the road. Not a coincidence. Oh, by the way, Washington. You know where I'm headed with this.
Yep.
6-0 at home, 0-4 on the road. And I think there's something to these West Coast teams having to travel as far as they are in a new conference, a very physical conference, and they're finding out how tough it is to win on the road. And like I said, the other thing is over the weekend, we had, and I'm looking for my notes. I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe it's like six teams lost in the top 16, okay? One of them was Indiana at Ohio State, kind of expected, okay? Right. The other five losses were all to unranked teams. One thing in common, every game where that ranked team lost, you know what, Dustin? They were on the road.
It's a new thing with these conferences expanding so far. It's going to be a thing. You see, it's not so much the SEC. I mean, that happens in the SEC, but they don't have to go. That's all pretty much central time zone, right? So they don't have to central or Eastern. So they don't have to travel a long ways or have that big disparity. But in the Big Ten and the ACC, maybe even the Big 12, you've got to go cross country. So it's not surprising. And I think, Jim, if I'm not mistaken, USC's lone win would still be in Los Angeles, right? Because they just beat UCLA this weekend. So if they're 1-4 on the road, their one win is not a home game, but it's technically they just had to go across the street.
That's right. That's right. They just got an Uber and went down the road.
That's right.
So, yeah. So I think there's a difference. And by the way, they have a neutral field win against LSU. So yep. I think that has to factor into this equation a bit. And the past couple of years, Georgia and Alabama have been so good. Going on the road didn't matter. I think the fact is, Dustin, there is not that – I'm not sure there's that elite team across the country, but it's definitely not in the Southeast Conference right now.
No, there's not. I think Oregon might be as close as you can get because I do think, well, they've had some trouble. I mean, they even struggled on the road against Wisconsin a few weeks ago, so maybe not. But I do think right now Oregon and Penn State are Oregon and Ohio State are probably about as close as you can get to the elite of the elite. I don't think Texas is that in that conversation. And this is what makes it makes me kind of wonder, like, I don't have regret that they advanced to 12 teams, but could you imagine the absolute chaos you would get with a 4-team playoff this year, Jim? I mean, it would be absurd.
Oh, man. The prospect of three Big Ten teams in it would just – Paul Feinbaum's head would have exploded, exploded if that happened. And, you know, it's just unfortunate. But the 12-team playoff, though, I'm such an advocate for it. I was before it took place this season. But now that we're this far into it, I love it even more, Dustin. Mm-hmm. There's so many games that are important. So, you know, in another year, Alabama-Oklahoma game would not have mattered because Alabama, with their two losses, would have already been eliminated. But instead, one more dagger goes into Alabama with that loss. So all these games become so much more important. Hey, Penn State in another year would have been eliminated when they lost to Ohio State.
Yep.
Indiana would have been eliminated with their loss to Ohio State. So overall, it's fantastic. So go ahead.
And I was going to say the other aspect of this is the Big 12 at this point would have no teams in consideration. Like they would just be out. But now you've got like, I don't know,
53 teams that are still in it.
That could still fight for the conference championship. I don't remember who tweeted this out, but it was like, a projection of who's going to be in each conference championship game. And it was like team one from the Big 12, I need a drink. Team two, we all need a drink, because you can't figure out, because it's not just, I don't think anybody controls their own destiny. I think teams have to win and then hope other results happen. So it's very odd. It's very bizarre, but that's what makes it fun, because you have basically half of the Big 12 still in it, like still could compete for a chance at the Big 12 title. And then they would automatically get a spot in the field. And so that's what makes this so much more fun, is you, like you said, Jim, so many teams were eliminated and you would just have a couple big games. Now, almost every game in the Big 12 is big. You're watching not only because your team is in it, you need somebody else to win or somebody else to lose. So you're hate watching.
Yeah. And here's the other argument I hate is, oh, they should do just the 12 best teams. No one from the Big 12 deserves to be in it. Well, you know what? You could eliminate the problem. And you know how, Dustin? Don't lose to Vanderbilt.
I love that you keep coming back to this.
I love it. And what I really particularly like about it, there's 1,000 football games on every weekend, okay? So yep. You can't see all of them. I did watch that game. And I loved every minute of it. And Vanderbilt, like I said, they took it to Alabama. They were not outplayed and won on some fluky play. They won it. So don't lose to Vanderbilt, and you'd be in the playoffs, and you could stop your complaining. So, all right, Dustin, I'm going to stop my complaining, and let's get back on track to what we're supposed to talk about, which is the Big Ten. Interesting week. Let's go to that Ohio State Indiana game. I'm not going to disrespect Will Howard, the quarterback at Ohio State, but I think that's the one component that is keeping Ohio State from being the super team. They've got the receivers, they've got the defense, they've got the running backs. I know the offensive line a little bit shaky, but they have a good quarterback when they usually have a superstar quarterback, but their defense just took over against Indiana and dominated that game.
Yeah, that was, I don't know that we expected to see that, but this was the question. Like, what's it going to be like when Indiana's going to play a team that has talent all over the field? And I think you saw, I don't know if Will Howard is necessarily the problem, Jim, because this has been a theme all season long. Ryan Day or Chip Kelly, they have gotten off to such slow starts. They got off to a slow start early in the season when they were playing like teams like Akron and Western Michigan. It's continued throughout the season. Northwestern scored first 2 weeks ago. Over the weekend, Indiana scored the first touchdown. I think if Ohio State comes out guns blazing, that might have been a 38-0 game.
Yes.
It's just for whatever reason, they do not play well in the first quarter. And I don't know if it's an adjustment thing. I don't know if it's a butterfly. I don't know what it is. If it's just trying to feel things out. But that, to me, is what's keeping them from being elite. I think they could have stomped on – they might have – I feel like they played well – it's been so long ago. I feel like they played well early against Oregon, but I'd have to go back, and I don't have that memory off the top of my head. But to me, that's the big thing. But they've got – yes, they have all the pieces it takes. Now, the one thing I will say is when you look at the final stats, Ohio State's rushing game was okay. They averaged about 4 yards per carry, but this has been what's plagued them in these big games before. They can't run the football. They need to be able to get to like 4.5, 5 yards per carry. And a lot of times they just haven't had that offensive line push. They haven't had the running backs. They didn't need it against Indiana, but when they get into the playoff and they're going to have to play Oregon again or Georgia, Tennessee, they're going to have to run the ball more effectively. And I thought to start the season, they did that. And now, as the competition has kind of stiffened up, they've struggled in that area.
At the end of the game, they had a 2-touchdown lead. The running back got a breakaway, could have scored. He went down at the 1-yard line. The announcers made a big deal of it, how unselfish he was, blah, blah, blah. don't care if he scored. It puts him up three touchdowns. There's no risk there in scoring that last touchdown. Ryan Day then played to get that last touchdown. Do you have an issue with that at all?
No.
Good.
No.
Neither do I.
Because this is what I say, Jim, and we're both baseball guys, right?
Yes.
And you don't want to see a team from your division or a team you've struggled to play with in the playoffs. And so if you have a chance to knock them out of contention, you do it. And I think that Ryan Day took a little bit of issue with Kurt Cignetti saying Ohio State sucks at his intro press conference. And then also I think there's a factor of, hey, you know what? We saw some things against this Indiana team that maybe exposes us, or I don't want to play them again. So if we have a chance to potentially – now, I don't think it did. I don't think it knocked them out because of the three losses that we talked about earlier from the SEC teams. But if you have a chance to kind of expose this team and get a margin of victory, Ohio State's also trying to play for seeding here. So there's a lot of different factors as to why I don't have a problem with it.
I don't have a problem with it on several levels. Number one, you want to show a lot of people just on the national scene, look at the scoreboard, look at the final score. Fine, put up that third touchdown victory. If this makes things snippy between him and Cignetti, I love it. And just like you said, in the baseball rivalry, there's that hated team, that rival you hate. I want the Atlanta Braves to lose 100-0, Dustin. That's what I want as a Mets fan. And that is going to be the final word on this topic because we're out of time, Dustin. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte and also well-known Atlanta Braves fan. So if you didn't know that, Dustin's an Atlanta Braves fan. I am a New York Mets fan. It's the middle of the off season, and we can't let it go. I had an opportunity, since Dustin brought up baseball, talking about hated rivals. I got my chance to get a shot in at the Braves. I'm going to be fair, though. I'm going to let you respond.
Well, all I have to respond is that we won a World Series in 2021, and I'm trying to think the last time the Mets got one. So,
let's move back to football.
Yeah, sure, sure.
All right. When we last left our football conversation, we were talking about the games from last week. Ohio State did take it to Indiana. I thought Ohio State's defense was spectacular. They were just living in the Indiana backfield. It was an impressive job. It's funny. One of our colleagues, Andy Shea, will often talk about who's the best unit on the field. Ohio State's defense was the best unit. By the way, the worst unit was Indiana's special teams unit.
We had a hive mind there, Jim, because I was thinking the exact same thing. Yes,
that one. We've been doing this too much together, Dustin. Let's look at a couple other games just real quick. The other one that just fascinated me, and I wasn't watching it, but I had it up on my iPad just to score the progress of it. Illinois beat Rutgers, and you could explain to our listeners what happened on that final play.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Greg Schiano takes a timeout to try to ice Illinois' kicker, make him think about it. It's going to be a long field goal, and would have been, what, in the 57
I think 58.
Yards? Something like that. And so instead, Brett Bielema was like, I got a little extra time to think about this. Nope, I don't like our chances. Luke Altmaier, Pat Bryant, 40-yard touchdown, Illinois. And I should say, Rutgers was ahead 31-30, so this would have been a game-winning field goal, or game-ending. Illinois wins or loses. So instead, they go for it, get the touchdown. They beat Rutgers 38-31, and, I mean, a dream season for Illinois at 8-3 continues. You kind of wonder if they don't lose to Minnesota. They're 9-2. Their losses are to Penn State and Oregon, both on the road. Are they in the playoff conversation? But that's neither here nor there. And then Rutgers, a team you and I, Jim, thought before the season was going to be 8 or 9 wins, 6-5. Pretty disappointing year for the Fighting Greg Schiano's.
Oh, it really was. And I think I've told you this. I have a buddy who's a Rutgers fan, and we just had a text conversation going back and forth about it. It was a heartbreaker, but you know what? That is college football. It's why it's the greatest sport going, Dustin. The last game I do want to get your take on is Penn State on the road against Minnesota. I thought Minnesota played a heck of a game. I think PJ Fleck really had his team ready for Penn State. I thought they were very well coached. Penn State, again, we talked about struggling on the road, yet they found a way to win it. And now I want to ask you, as kind of you're outside the Penn State bubble, when James Franklin calls for the fake punt from his own 34-yard line, your thoughts on that?
The cojones that James Franklin has displayed. And I wish he would do that in bigger games. I loved it. I don't know how people felt. I don't know if it – I mean, look, if it doesn't work, then everybody's complaining about it because you probably end up losing that game. But here's the thing. I don't want to say for once, because I think James Franklin, he's been successful enough at Penn State for the last 11 years. But it feels like an awful lot of times he coaches games not to lose instead of to win. And I felt like that was a move to win the game. You know you have some of the best players on the field. You've got more talent. I still think Minnesota, considering their talent, is really well coached in pretty much every facet. Go out and win a game. Go out and win a ball game on the road. Don't put it in Minnesota's hands. Don't give them a chance to set the tone and steal one from you. So I loved the call. And I think, Jim, this was what was interesting. I mean, when you look down the box score, you watch this game, I think this played out about the way both teams would have liked, right? Like both teams defensively shut down the run. Three total penalties for 25 total yards in this game. The big difference was all season long, Minnesota has forced the turnovers, but in this game, Penn State got two of them, and they came at pretty critical times. They only got 6 points off those turnovers, but end up being the difference in the game, 26-25 and a win. I think that's a game that in those situations, James Franklin has lost. We've talked about, you know, a few years ago, it was Michigan State. They lost back-to-back years after losses to Ohio State. They've always kind of dropped these type of games. In 2019, it was Minnesota. So it looked like, especially with Minnesota setting the tone 10-0 early, Penn State didn't let that happen. And that's the second time now that I think Penn State has avoided that. Because as you mentioned earlier, going on the road in USC and winning on the road, that's now two times they've won on the road in a situation where, I don't want to say typical James Franklin, but in the past we've seen Penn State lose those games.
And I'll add in the other game against Wisconsin on the road behind and losing your starting quarterback, and the backup came in and won the game. I also want to take the opportunity and get your perspective as the outsider. Me personally, I think there's been Drew Aller has been such a big part of this. And a couple things to put themselves into position to go for it on the fake punt. He was flushed out of the pocket. He scrambled and picked up like 8 or 9 yards to put them in position for that. I don't think he would have been able to do that a year ago.
No.
there were two more fourth down conversions. The first one was him on a Drew Aller on the quarterback sneak, tush push, whatever you want to call it. And the third and final fourth down, they threw for it, and it eventually went to Tyler Warren. The intended target was Nick Singleton, who was covered. And Drew Aller bought a little bit of time, found the secondary receiver open, and got the ball to him. I'm not sure he makes those plays a year ago.
I think this is what you see. So I don't know. I don't want to say quarterback development has been a problem at Penn State, but it's kind of like Trace McSorley, what you see is what you get. I don't know. Like, he was a really good quarterback when he was a starter. I don't know that he progressed over the course of, and that may sound bad, but like, he was the same player. He had a lot of consistency. He was a winner. I don't know if there's one aspect of his game where you said he wouldn't have been able to do that a year ago.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I think this might help confirm what you're talking about. Prior to Drew Aller coming to Penn State, okay, do you know what the highest ranked high school football player Penn State recruited at quarterback?
I don't off the top of my head.
How could you not know that? There's only 18 teams in this conference. You don't know the history of every single recruit. Well, let me, because I looked into this a while back. Sean Clifford was the highest ranked quarterback coming in, and he was ranked the 200th best player in the country. So that was the most highly regarded quarterback he had, James Franklin brought in prior to Drew Aller. Now we all know, you know, Drew Aller is that five-star pedigree, and I think he has the higher ceiling than any of those other quarterbacks.
I don't disagree with that, and I think my what I would say is I think there's now a new level of trust, and I don't know if it's been the guys he's hired or if it's been his personality, but I do think James Franklin has relented some of the reins and given Andy Kotelnicki a little bit more leeway. I think there's a lot of trust. I remember in the preseason, like, Drew Aller seemed like he was having fun at those practices working with Andy Kotelnicki. And a lot of it seemed like, you know, they were trying to incorporate some of the same language they had been using in Penn State, a lot of the same concepts, but they were going to let Kotelnicki kind of toy with it, insert his own wrinkles and things like that. And so I think this is a Penn State team that has a lot of trust and belief in their offense. Now, I do think that they went back to their old ways in that Ohio State game. I think James Franklin got a little tight in that game, especially building a 10-0 lead and kind of just tried to squeeze that one out. But overall, to your point, I just don't know if they'd have had an offensive coordinator. Joe Moorhead was good. I think Mike Yurcich was good. I think they're good offensive coordinators. But in terms of developing quarterbacks and the trust that they built with James Franklin, now it's only year one, but it feels, I don't, maybe statistically it doesn't seem different, but it looks different when you watch the games, and it feels different when you watch the games.
Being a little closer to the program, I think you hit it. I think there's a trust there. Now, I do believe he brought Mike Yurcich in and gave him the controls, gave him the reins, but then was like not happy with what he did. Wait a minute. Sure. I thought this guy would be creative. I thought there'd be more to it. And it just didn't happen. And it I think became pretty obvious when he actually fired the guy in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
That there was a lot going on there that they were unhappy with. And you do get the sense that not just with, you know, James Franklin handing the reins over to Kotelnicki, but also the players' trust in him. And he does enough of these fun things that it really, I think, keeps the players engaged, Dustin.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think you see it. I mentioned this last week when Penn State played Purdue, and I was forced to watch that game. somebody sent out, and I think I said this on the show last week, we're just playing with our food at this point. And that to me is what, like, that will keep players engaged. And that's a good way to stay. Like, I don't care what anybody says. You're not locked in for 60 minutes when you're up 42-3 late in the third quarter. You're just not. And so that's a way to keep guys engaged and to be like, hey, we got to play a full 60-minute game here because we don't know who we're going to see in the playoff. We don't know if we're going to see Oregon or Georgia or Tennessee or Boise State. So we've got to be prepared to play a 60-minute game. So I don't, like I said, I don't think that Penn State has had bad offensive coordinators. I think Ricky Ronnie did a good job. I think Joe Moorhead did a good job. I think Mike Yurcich did an okay job, but just not to the level that they needed. But it just feels a little bit different to me.
All right, that's the last word. We got one more quarter to go. Stick around. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer, an unfortunate fan of the Purdue Boilermakers. You know what, Dustin? It's because of you that last Friday night, I actually turned on the Purdue-Michigan State game.
I'm sorry. And
Purdue, they ended up making a game of it, but boy, that's just a bad team. That's a hard watch.
It's a very difficult watch. Now, the second half was much more enjoyable than the first half, but there's been far too many first halves this season. They've scored a total of 13 points in the first quarter this season, Jim.
Oh, my goodness.
It's rough.
I had to turn it off at halftime because I couldn't take it. I felt so bad for you, but I didn't feel bad enough to watch the second half, though, Dustin. So let's look forward. We've got Oregon. They're locked in. They are going to be in the conference championship game. It will be against either Ohio State or Penn State if enough things happen. But having happened is Penn State has to beat Maryland, which we think will happen. Michigan has to beat Ohio State in the game. Does Michigan have any chance at all? It's in Columbus. Do they have a shot at it?
I don't think so, no. But what I will say is I think maybe they can boy, I want to watch my tongue here. Because I also feel like Ryan Day, given the chance to run it up on Michigan after what's happened the last 3 years and kind of the way it unfolded, I think he might unleash hell on them. But what I was going to say is Michigan might be able to make it a game because they looked – now, I know it's Northwestern, but they won 50-6. So if you're going to have some level of momentum going into that game, I think that their confidence is probably is about as high as it's been all season. So from that perspective – I think Michigan will make it maybe a little bit better game, but ultimately I suspect it's going to look like what we saw last week with Indiana, where maybe Michigan plays well for a quarter, maybe a half, and then Ohio State just says, nah, we've had enough of this, and they cruise.
You know, we have a segment every week on this show where we make our picks with the spread. And a week ago, I took Ohio State against Indiana, even giving up 12 and a half points. My feeling was, like what you said, Ohio State would eventually, they're bigger, stronger. It would wear Indiana down. They would do. This week, the spread is 20 points. Ohio State's favored over Michigan. And my feeling, I'm going to go with what you have said since before the season started. Michigan is not good. They're not good. Yeah. And Ohio State is going to have at least 3 years of frustration going on. And if they have a chance to pile it up on them, run it up to score. And you know what? Ryan Day, more power to you. Go ahead, do it. If that makes things even uglier for next year's game, so be it.
Yeah, I'm all in favor of it. I mean, I do think that it's just going to get to a point. It's going to be a bloodbath. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, I get the sense that that's what's going to happen.
And I am okay with that. And that would create an Oregon, Ohio State conference championship game. And I'm very okay with that because I think they've been the two best teams. And I think it's going to be a really, really good game. So here's the next question. And this, I think, is more a question probably for Penn State fans than what from your perspective, but I still want to hear it. Should Penn State fans root for Michigan, or should they just say, you know what, we're okay not playing in this conference championship game. Give me my home playoff game.
I think, let me say this, if it's Ohio State and Oregon in the Big Ten championship game, it doesn't matter. Ohio State could lose and it doesn't matter. Like, yeah, they would have lost to Oregon, but they beat Penn State. They beat Indiana. They have enough to get in, especially if we're talking about three-loss SEC teams in the conversation. My concern, actually, is if Penn State were to get in and got beat, maybe not blown out, but maybe a 14-point loss to Oregon, people are going to point to it and say, look, the only time Penn State's played two really good teams, they lost. They lost at home, and they lost at a neutral site. Do they deserve to get in? Two losses. Now, I don't think it would matter for Penn State either, but I think it would do them more harm. So I would say, you know what? Just let Ohio State take care of business. Sit back, enjoy your extra week off, and then come back to Beaver Stadium in a couple weeks and have the biggest tailgate you've ever had in your life. That's my perspective.
Biggest tailgate in my life, challenge accepted. And, you know, maybe, hey, we talked about getting you out for a game. Maybe we should get you out for a playoff game, Dustin.
Whew, that'd be chilly.
Wouldn't that be fun, though? And you know what, though? I'm with you. And you said, I'm with you. I think even with a loss in the conference championship game, Penn State would still be in the playoffs. But I think they would lose their seeding, and yes, I don't think they would have a home game, which I think is really important. And they would go from having that week off, having the couple weeks off before the playoff game, and then playing at home versus a lower seeded team, to having to play the extra game, then have to go on the road to play a higher seeded team. So I would rather go after the best positioning for the playoffs than worry about the Big Ten championship.
Yeah, I don't even know what the point of playing in these championship games is. Like, it makes sense now for the Big 12, right? Like, yes, whoever wins that should get in. Maybe the ACC, whoever wins that gets in. But, like, the Big Ten, there's no benefit, in my opinion, because – Those four teams. Well, I understand that part of it. Yeah, as Jim wiggles his fingers together in the sign of dollar signs. I don't know. I'm happy if I'm a Penn State fan. I'm perfectly content 11-1 and just relaxing and having a stress free Saturday on the Big Ten championship game.
I'm with you on Dustin, on that, Dustin. I think a lot of Penn State fans are also, which leads us now to the playoffs. And I think what we're looking at is the Southeast Conference have set themselves up for just three teams getting in, and it's going to be Georgia versus the winner of Texas A&M in their conference championship game. But it's like the only thing that could get them that extra team, I guess, is if A&M were to beat Texas, then Georgia, they get in with three losses as the conference champion, and probably Texas still makes it with two losses, Georgia with their two losses, Tennessee with their two losses, right?
Well, let me tell you about a little scenario I've conjured up here, and I don't know how much time we have.
We got a couple minutes, so go for it.
The SEC getting two teams in. The two teams who play in the conference championship game. Okay? So let's just, for the sake of argument, say it's Texas and Georgia. Maybe you can make an argument for Tennessee. I'm not quite there yet. Nonetheless, so we've got Texas and Georgia in there. Right now, if you look at the SEC, you have Clemson at 9-2 overall, Miami at 10-1, SMU at 10-1. Those three teams don't play each other. One, let's say Clemson plays SMU. I don't know how that tiebreaker works, but let's just say Clemson plays SMU or Miami in the championship game. One of those teams is going to be potentially, if they all three win, 11-1. Clemson wins the championship game, handing one of those other teams a second loss. I think all three of those teams maybe should get in, because Clemson's going to get in. The one-loss team's going to get in. The two-loss team should get in. The Big Ten's getting four. So that's four from the Big Ten, three from the ACC, two from the SEC, one in the group of five, one from the Big 12, and then one that refuses to join a conference in Notre Dame. And that brings our grand total to 12. Now, it will never happen because the college football playoff knows where its bread is buttered, and it knows how much money it's going to make and how much money it will lose if they put three ACC teams in over SEC teams. But if I was on the committee, that would be my vote, just to spite the stupid SEC.
Oh, now forget this. It's not salty, Dustin. It's spiteful, Dustin.
Yes,
and I love it.
Spiteful shooty.
I like it. Let's go with that. Now, I think you're right. It won't happen. And I think one of the things that hurts them, that Clemson lost to Georgia, where they just got boat raced in the out of conference early in the year, I think that will hurt them. But I do think we're in a position now where I believe Texas will beat Texas A&M, which eliminates Texas A&M from the conversation. Then you would have Tennessee, Texas, and Georgia, Texas with one loss, Tennessee and Georgia each with two losses. I think at that point, those three teams are in. Even if Texas were to beat Georgia in their conference championship game, giving Georgia three losses, I think Georgia would still make it. And those three teams, and I think there'd be two ACC teams, whoever wins the conference championship game, let's say it's Miami for sake of argument, and I think it would be Miami versus SMU, that might eliminate us. Then it's between SMU and Clemson getting that last spot.
Yeah, let's say Texas A&M wins, though, Jim. How do you justify three teams if Texas A&M beats Texas? I would put Georgia and Tennessee, and that's it. I would not put any of those three lost teams in at all. That, to me, if Texas wins, it's fine. It's a moot point. I could see three teams. I don't get it. I don't understand. If Texas loses to Texas A&M, they have no good wins. Not one.
They have nothing. They have nothing. And I think it would just be the politics of the Southeast Conference getting at least three teams in, and Texas being a big name. And I think that's how it happens, Dustin. But I would still consider it a victory if it's just three Southeast Conference teams, because they wanted five.
Yeah, correct. I agree with you 100%.
So we'll take that. All right. We will know more after this week's games, Dustin. Thank you so much. And by the way, I really like this spiteful Dustin. We're going to need to bring him out more often. So
I'll see what I can do.
All right. Thank you all for listening. That's it for our show. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.